Good morning, Shabbat Shalom, and welcome to UIWU. This is our Sabbath morning study coming to you from St. Francisville. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a long week, and so once again, Shabbat Shalom. Welcome to a wonderful day of peaceful Bible study. Let's kick it off with a good Bible study this morning. Last week, I covered what I felt was fairly adequately the subject of, at least my view from the biblical perspective as I understand it, the idea of the suffering servant. Over the last several weeks, we've been dealing with this subject matter. We've been covering this quite extensively. And ultimately, what we find, particularly in this section of Isaiah, 2 Isaiah, Isaiah 40 through 66, a servant that is therein described, a servant that at times speaks, a servant that is spoken of or about. And that servant is, when it is identified seven times very clearly in the text, that servant is described as Israel. But there are cases, there are some 20 mentions of servant in this section of Isaiah. The remainder, excluding the seven that I just spoke of, are not identified. And so what I wanted to do last week was sort of establish the fact that, at least as I understand it, that servant is also Israel, but it is a special group within the group. It is a servant within a servant, which I have identified as Israel's servant is the prophets. So you have the servant nation, Israel, and then within that servant, you have a group of servants that are called prophets. 19 times in the Tanakh, or the Hebrew Bible, we get this phrase where God is speaking, and he says, "My servants, the prophets." And these servants, the prophets, suffer tremendously. Upon them is a heavy hand. They have not a task that people would want to raise their hand for. In fact, that's one of the true tests of a true prophet. When they're offered the job, quite often they say, "Can you pick another?" And so we see that time and again. We see that this group of servants within the servant nation, this group, my servants, the prophets, suffer tremendously. They are often abused, maligned, mistreated, spoken ill of, threatened, and at times in the Hebrew Bible, they're killed. So this, again, this role is not one that people typically volunteer for. Now, I know in modern times, there may be people that say, "I wish I was a prophet." If you ever hear somebody say that, you know immediately that they probably haven't read the Bible. Because they would not be saying that, at least as I understand it. I want to start this morning in the book of Amos. It's a familiar passage. It's a passage that I have read many, many times, as I know you have, and I've used it quite extensively in teaching over the years. But this week, as I was studying for today's class, one element of this passage stood out and caused me to dig a little bit deeper. So I want to begin in Amos chapter 3, and I want to read, beginning in verse 1, Amos 3, verse 1, "Hear this word that Jehovah has spoken against you, O children of Israel, against the whole family which I brought up from the land of Egypt, saying, 'You only have I known of all the families of the earth.'" Now, that's an interesting passage. God is very intimate with one particular group. Now, we know he knows other nations. We have other texts which say this. But in this sense, "You only have I known of all the families of the earth. Therefore, I will punish you for all your iniquities." In other words, those who are close to God have a demand upon their behavior. They have a high expectation. You know, have you ever told your children that, you know, "You're going to behave this way because you represent me when you're out"? I don't know if other people do that, but it's the idea that you represent someone else. Can two walk together, verse 3 says, unless they be agreed? Will a lion roar in the forest when he has no prey? Will a young lion cry out of his den if he's taken nothing? Can a bird fall in a snare upon the earth where there is no lure for it? Does a snare spring up from the earth and have taken nothing at all? Shall a shofar be sounded in the city and the people not be afraid? Shall evil befall a city and Jehovah has not done it? All of these things indicate that something leads to these events. There is a predecessor. There is something which causes the actions which are listed here. Now look at this. Surely Adonai Jehovah will do nothing without revealing his secret to his servants, the prophets. The lion has roared, who will not fear? Adonai Jehovah has spoken, who can but prophesy? This particular passage, this part, surely Adonai Jehovah will do nothing without revealing his secret to his servants, the prophets. The lion has roared, who will not fear? Adonai Jehovah has spoken, who can but prophesy? This is what I want to focus on. All of these things say that something causes the action. The lion roars, the people fear. The trap closes, something triggered it. And so it is with the prophet speaking. The prophecies are prompted by something. And that something is that Jehovah has revealed his secret to his servants, the prophets. You follow? So the idea is that they don't just speak on their own. When they do speak on their own without having heard the sod, or the secret as it's translated, of Jehovah, they're speaking on their own. And that's the prophets that we want to avoid. So the idea that I want to establish first is that that Adonai Jehovah reveals, literally unveils, kind of pulls the curtain back to his secret, as the English says it, and the prophet sees it and then goes forward. Now, what hit me as I studied this week was I had a question. The question was that, what does it really mean, the secret? His secret. In Hebrew, the word is sod. Sod. The Hebrew translated secret is sod. And it has as its root meaning the idea of an intimate counsel. It's like a personal audience, if you will, and thus a secret. So like you, if you are close with other people, you know what a secret is supposed to be, is that you reveal a secret to someone, and the idea is that they respect that intimacy that you're giving to them when you tell them this word. So that's what a secret is. So it's supposed to be. So this idea is that God pulls into his secret counsel the prophet, his servants, the prophets. And it says he unveils it. He pulls back the curtain so that they can look in. Now, the servants, the prophets, are privy to this secret, intimate counsel. Now, a sod, or an intimate counsel, doesn't have to be good. Like, there can be an intimate counsel of bad people. We have plenty of examples of that in the scripture. And a lot of times, these intimate counsels for the bad people, I'm using this phrase so that I can make a point, is that sometimes those secret counsels, the sod of the bad guys, is against the prophets who are in the sod of Jehovah. I'll give you an example. Look at Jeremiah 15. We read a part of Jeremiah 15 last week, but I want to pick up just a couple of verses here. Jeremiah 15:1. 15:17. It says, this is Jeremiah talking, and he says, I sat not in the assembly of the merrymakers, nor rejoiced. I sat alone because of your hand, for you filled me with indignation, my pains perpetual, and so forth. When he says in the English, I sat not in the assembly of the merrymakers, that's the sowed. He didn't sit in the secret council of the people at the, you know, at the pub. They're all enjoying themselves and so forth. That's one secret, intimate council. What he's saying is, I sat alone. And why is he alone? Because the hand is heavy on him. Okay, now look, let's talk about this sowed a little bit more. Look at Jeremiah 23. I really want to get to the point that what we can learn from the Bible about what this secret counsel, this intimate counsel is. When Jehovah pulls back the veil, do we get a glimpse of what that secret is? All right, so look with me, Jeremiah 23, and beginning in verse 16 at the white space. Thus says Jehovah of hosts. Behold, thus says Jehovah of hosts, hearken not to the words of the prophets that prophesy to you. They lead you into vanity. They speak a vision of their own heart and not out of the mouth of Jehovah. They say still to them that despise me, Jehovah has said, you shall have peace. And they say to everyone that walks after the stubbornness of his own heart, no evil shall come upon you. For who has stood in the counsel of Jehovah that he might perceive and hear his word? Who's marked his word and heard it? And then there's a white space. And then the text begins, behold, the storm wind of Jehovah, fury has gone forth, a whirling tempest. It shall fall upon the head of the wicked. The anger of Jehovah shall not return until he's executed, till he has performed the thoughts of his heart. In the latter days, you will consider it perfectly. I've not sent these prophets, yet they ran. I've not spoken to them, yet they prophesied. But if they had stood in my counsel, then they would have caused my people to hear my words and turn them from their evil way and from the evil of their doings. Now, the translation, many translations translate the word ra as evil. It's not, it can mean bad. Either way, it's just bad. And so one of the things that stands out is this is a warning that don't listen to these prophets. There are two groups of prophets going at the same time. In Jeremiah in particular, and Jeremiah over and over and over uses the word lie. These lying prophets, I don't remember how many times, it's not part of my study today, but it's dozens of times. I think it's in the 40s where the word lie, form of falsehood, lie is used, because Jeremiah is up against, he's got the true word of Jehovah. Why? Because he's in the council. He's in the sowed. He's hearing directly from God. And the message that he's hearing is not the message that these other false prophets are giving. These false prophets are saying, thus says the Lord, just like he is. You remember? They're saying the same thing. But the problem is they're saying, look, bad's not going to come. And Jeremiah's saying, yes, it is. Yeah, it's coming. It's coming. It's coming quickly. But they prefer, people love good news, right? So they'd rather hear, let's listen to prophet so-and-so. He's a lot, yeah, he takes it down a notch. Jeremiah's always got bad news. We don't want to hear this. So what we get is Jehovah is speaking through Jeremiah. He says in verse 18, he asks the question, who has stood in the counsel of Jehovah? And then he qualifies, how do you know? Here's the thing. If one stands in the counsel of Jehovah, according to Jeremiah 23:18, he will perceive and hear his word. Now, literally in the Hebrew, it says he'll see it and hear it. So if one is in this intimate counsel, they're being shown and they're being spoken to. They get a vision of what is to come. And here Jehovah says, the ones that are in that intimate counsel have seen and heard it, and they've marked his word and listen. In Hebrew, marked his word is really they paid attention. So it's like the veil is pulled back, and those who are in the secret counsel, the sod of Jehovah, get to peer in and listen. Think about Isaiah chapter 6, for instance, where Isaiah says that he beheld this in this vision, and he's in the throne room, and he beholds the Lord sitting high upon a throne, and his train fills, and he sees these angelic, we use angelic, but they're seraphim, the burning ones. Seraph means to burn. Notice that they're attending an altar, Isaiah 6, this is Isaiah 6. They're attending an altar, and they pull coals off the altar. Isaiah says, I'm a man of unclean lips, and, you know, I dwell among a people of unclean lips. And this, what is called a seraph, seraphim is plural. A seraph takes tongs, and he gets a hot coal, and he puts it on his mouth. Now, he sees, and he hears. He's in that sod, that secret counsel. Okay, so you get, that's just one example, but it's a picture that we have of this. Look at Jeremiah 23:22. A little bit more again, but if they had stood in my counsel, in my sod, then they should have caused my people to hear my words and turn them from their bad way and from the evil of their doings. That's how you know. If someone is in the sod, they're likely not, at least in times of trouble like this where impending danger is coming, they are not likely to say everything's okay. Here it says very clearly, if they had stood in there, they would have done these two things. They would have caused my people to hear my words, and not words that they made up. You see, that's the contrast. And they would have turned them from their evil way and from their bad. Now, it's interesting because what this says is that the expectancy of my servants, the prophets, is that they will make use of what they gain in the sowed. You heard it, you saw it, take that message for it. Some have even proposed that the Hebrew word navi is tied to the Hebrew word bow, which can mean go or come. It indicates movement. So the idea that a Navi is related to one who gets and brings, or goes and gets and brings a message from the sowed. I'm going to say the sowed. It's not always in heaven, right? But sometimes, Isaiah 6, it's the throne room, which we assume is a vision that either takes place in the temple, but it seems to be more of a heavenly type vision, at least. But so if a prophet is one who goes and gets and brings back a message, they're one, that's the expectancy, right? First of all, you have to be invited into the sowed. And you know how that happens over and over in the text? It says things like, and the word of the Lord was unto Devar Yehovah came unto me saying, you know, it's this idea that the word comes to you. You're invited into that sowed. Now, I want to read a few passages. I want you to go with me to Ezekiel chapter 13, Ezekiel 13. And this uses the word a slightly different way, but it's important. Ezekiel 13, beginning in verse 1 at the white space. And the word of Jehovah came to me. Vayehi devar Yehovah elai lemor. And the word of Jehovah came to me saying, Son of man, prophesy against the prophets of Israel that prophesy. Interesting. Prophesy against the prophets of Israel that prophesy, and say to them that prophesy out of their own hearts, hear the word of Jehovah. Thus says Adonai Jehovah, woe to the foolish prophets that follow their own spirit and have seen nothing. See, I want you to get the idea that a prophet is not just hearing, they are being shown things. We get this image, it comes up, that they're seeing something, that have seen nothing. Oh, Israel, your prophets are like foxes among ruins. You have not gone up into the breaches, nor have you built a fence for the house of Israel to stand in the battle in the day of Jehovah. They have seen vanity and lying divination. They say, talking about the false prophets, Jehovah says, and Jehovah hasn't sent them. And they hope that he will confirm the word. I like that. It's like he's teasing. He's saying, they say something, they made this up, and they just hope it comes to pass. Because then they can go, see, I tell you, I was a prophet. Have you not seen a vain vision? And have you not spoken a lying divination in that you say, Jehovah says, yet I've not spoken? Therefore, thus says Adonai Jehovah, because you've spoken vanity and seen lies, therefore, behold, I'm against you, says Adonai Jehovah. My hand shall be against the prophets that see vanity and that divine lies. Here's a key. They're seeing something. And they're hearing something, but it's internal to themselves. It's not the true word. They, continuing in verse 9, they shall not be in the council of my people. Notice the word council there. That's our sod. These who make these things up, who see false things, who see vanity, and who speak lying words that didn't come from Jehovah, they won't be in that inner circle. Listen, neither shall they be written in the writing of the house of Israel. Huh. Their books won't make the cut. Neither shall they enter into the land of Israel, and you shall know that I am Adonai Jehovah, because they've led my people astray, saying peace, and there was no peace. And if anyone builds a wall, these daub it with whitewash. Say to them who daub it with whitewash that it shall fall. There shall be a deluge of rain, and you, O you great hailstones, shall fall, and a stormy wind shall break out. Lo, when the wall is fallen, shall it not be said to you, where is the daubing with which you daubed it? They build a wall, a false wall, a wall of lies, and then they daub it. They plug, you know, and make it look all pretty. It's whitewashed. We even say that in our language today. Someone whitewashes a story. They create the illusion that what they say is real. It's important. You know, these people, think about it. They're saying, look, the Lord said, the enemy, by the way, at this time, the enemy is at the gate. You can hear the hoofbeats. This is what I want you to imagine. That trouble is impending. A boiling cauldron is tipping towards the city of Jerusalem. And guess what? These prophets are saying, look, it's not going to happen. We're the blessed. We're the chosen. What do you call those preachers? A prosperity preacher telling you, you know, that everybody's going to have these wonderful things happen. And, you know, if you plant that seed, that donation, it's a bunch of lies. It's a whitewashed story. So that sowed, it's that these false prophets will not make the cut. They're not in the inner sowed, and therefore they won't be in the intimate council of God's people. This is the image here. Now go with me to Psalm 25. And verse 14. I want to pick up a little bit more about the sowed. 25:14, the English says, "The counsel of the Lord is with them that fear him, and he will reveal them, to them his covenant." Okay. The sod of Jehovah, the intimate counsel of Jehovah, is for those who fear him. And look, those who make up lies and build walls and daub them, whitewash them, those who are speaking words of vanity that are saying Jehovah sent them that didn't send, all of those are not fearing God. You know, it takes a lot of, you could say courage, for someone to lie on Jehovah. And that's what they're doing. They're using his name in vain, if you will, to use the English there. Because what that really means is to lift it for a lie. So if I say Jehovah said and Jehovah didn't say, then I have just committed an act of treason, basically. But this is interesting. The sod of Jehovah is with them that fear him, and he will reveal to them his covenant. He will cause them to know his covenant. Interesting. Now look at Psalm 111, Psalm 111 and verse 1. Hallelujah. I will praise Jehovah with my whole heart in the assembly of the upright and in the congregation. Now, in this particular passage, assembly is the sod. In the sod, besod yasharim, the intimate counsel of the upright ones. So there's this. It's like a sanctum sanctorum, to use the Latin. It's a holy of holies, a kadosh kadoshim. Within the servant nation, you have a servant people. And the servant nation is supposed to be an am kodesh, a holy people, an assembly of righteous ones. But within that people, there is an even holier group singled out, called, specially chosen, hand of God is upon them to lead and direct and instruct the larger group. Now, a couple of other passages. Look with me at the book of Job. Job, chapter 15 and verse 8. And this, by the way, is these are the words of Eliphaz, the Temanite. You know, his friends come to advise him as to why all this bad stuff happens. Remember, Job begins with this idea, "Have you considered my servant Job? None is like him." So we're dealing with the servant again. Job is an interesting study. If you look at this idea that here is a righteous one, one of many throughout the generations, Job makes that list, right? But he says here, in Eliphaz, some of Eliphaz's advice, he asks, "Dost thou listen in to the counsel of God and keep wisdom to yourself?" He's sort of mocking Job, right? So it's this idea that, are you in the inner counsel, Job? Do you happen to listen to God speaking? You see? So this idea is known. People knew in the ancient world about this secret council. It's an idea that's being talked about as early as the book of Job, which, it, at least according to tradition, is supposed to be dated back to the early parts of Israelite history. Some say the time of Moses, some say patriarchal times, right? All right. Now look at one other use in chapter 29, Job 29 and verse 4. We use this one other place, this idea of sowed. Verse 1, actually, we'll start. "Moreover, Job continued his discourse and said, Oh, that I were, as in months past, as in the days when God preserved me, when his candle shone upon my head, and when by his light I walked through darkness, as I was in the days of my youth, when God shielded my tent, when the Almighty was set with me, when my children were about me. He's looking back on a happier time. And notice in the Hebrew, it says, when the counsel of Eloah was upon my tent. So he gets this, he wants this image, like when things were really well, the counsel, I was in that inner counsel. And we also get another story at the opening chapters of Job, where there is this sort of a intimate counsel going on, and the B'nai Elohim are there. You know, people debate what that means. Who are the, are they angels? Are they, you know, but the idea is that there is this counsel. This is what I'm picking up on. And then one other passage, just so you have it in your notes, in the book of Proverbs, book of Proverbs, chapter 3, Proverbs 3, and I think it's verse 32, for the underhand man is abomination to Jehovah, and he shares his counsel with the righteous. So the idea is that you have an abominable side, that's also sort of a counsel, but with the righteous, Jehovah shares this intimate counsel. Now, the intimate counsel is reserved for the upright. You just don't get in the Sod Jehovah because you won't in. And just because one says, thus says Jehovah, does not mean that they took that from their encounter at the Sod. This inner circle of servants, it's an inner circle of trust that's the prophets who are part of this, they see and hear the words of Jehovah, and then they bring the message. So they go get the message, spiritually speaking, you could say in a vision or whatever. They retrieve the message, they internalize the message, and then they bring it to the people in order, the goal, the hope, the desire, the intention is that they will present this message and the people will respond accordingly. Now, how often does that happen? How many times do we read the prophets are told in the Sod, they're in the council, and they hear from Jehovah, look, I'm not sending you to people of a different language. I'm sending you to people. It's not that they don't understand your speech. They're just not listening. They're not going to do what you tell them to do. So he says, if I sent them to a people of a strange speech, they would respond. We get an example of that. Jonah. Jonah goes to another people, and the message that God gives evokes repentance, true repentance. The message of God to people at its root is turn from the bad and walk in the way. That's the message. It happens over and over and over. And then sometimes that's qualified. What does it mean to walk in the good? What are you telling me to turn away from? We have those as part of the message. But the message at its core is this, turn from the bad, from their bad way, and turn from their bad deeds. That's what you hear in the council. You go in the council, you hear this, you see it, a vision, perhaps of the bad that's going on. You know, in Ezekiel, there are a couple of examples where he says, son of man, look at what they're doing. You know, the idea is he says, see it, and he shows him in a vision, and they're digging through the wall of the, you know, all these different things. They're bowing to other gods. So they're shown it and they hear it. Now, I propose to you that this task and an invitation to the Sod is by God and from God. One doesn't ask to be accepted into the Sod, into this inner group, into this intimate circle of individuals, because this group that are invitation only, invited into the Sod, they could be doing something totally else, something totally differently maybe. They could be Amos, You know, like that example, I use it often. Amos is taking care of sycamore trees. And Jehovah said, Amos, I have a message I need you to go give the king. And, you know, he's even challenged. He's told, don't come around here with that. Go prophesy in Judah. They like it down there. We're happy here. And he says ultimately, look, I'm not a prophet or the son of the prophet. I was taking care of sheepfolds and dealing with sycamore trees. And Jehovah told me, come say this, and I'm going to say it. So they're invited in. They go, they get, they see, and then they bring it back. They then have a unique role, which I understand, and the Bible makes this plain in my understanding, that they then function in between the people and God. Don't get nervous. This is what happens. They are an intermediary, if you will. Doesn't mean that I'm saying a person can't go directly to God. It's not the point. My point is that imagine in a linear drawing, you have the people, you have God, and in the middle of that, you have the prophet. The prophet is that piece in the middle, the missing link between God and man. And that's where they are. This is an invitation only. They have a very unique task, and that task ultimately is to bring about, at times, deliverance. And it has to do with their message and their function in that role. Look at Jeremiah 15 again. This time, I want to go to verse 1, Jeremiah 15, 1. All right, Jeremiah 15, 1. Then Jehovah said to me, though Moses and Samuel were to stand before me, my mind could not incline towards this people. Send them out of my sight and let them depart. And it shall come to pass if they say to you, whither shall we depart? Then you shall tell them, thus says Jehovah, such as for death to death, such as for sword to sword, and so forth. He's saying to Jeremiah, Jehovah's telling Jeremiah in the Sod, he says, listen, if Moses and Samuel were right here, I would not incline myself towards this people in their favor. I think that's an interesting. When you tell Jeremiah, he doesn't say, I take from this, he's saying, listen, Jeremiah, you're my man for the day. And Jeremiah's my favorite, one of my favorites, right? But he tells Jeremiah, even if Moses and Samuel, you know, it's like Jeremiah's thinking, wow, those two. I mean, think about what he's saying. Even if those two were, it wouldn't affect anything. Now look at Ezekiel. Here's another example. Look at Ezekiel. I'm talking about those who are called into the Sod, who have a position in between God and the people. Chapter 14 of Ezekiel, let's begin at the white space in verse 12. The word of Jehovah came to me saying, son of man, when the land sins against me by trespassing grievously, then will I stretch out my hand upon it and will break its staff of bread, send famine upon it, will cut off man and beast from it. Though these three men, Noah, Daniel, Eov, Job, though Noah, Daniel, and Job were in it, they should only save their own lives by the righteousness, says Adonai Jehovah. If I cause evil beasts to pass through the land and they spoil it so that it be desolate, that no man pass through because of the beast, though these three men were in it, as I live, says Adonai Jehovah, they shall deliver neither sons nor daughters. They alone shall be saved, but the land shall be desolate. Or if I bring a sword upon that land and say, sword, go through the land so that I cut off man and beast from it. Though these three men were in it, as I live, says Adonai Jehovah, they shall deliver neither sons nor daughters, but they alone shall be saved. Or if I send a pestilence in the land, pour out my anger, my fury upon it in blood to cut off from it man and beast, though Noah, Daniel, and Job were in it, as I live, says Adonai Jehovah, they shall deliver neither son nor daughter, they shall but save their own lives by their righteousness. This is interesting because it says that there are times that certain men of the sowed were able to deliver more than themselves. Think about it. We do have examples. They function in that role to intercede on the behalf of. Ezekiel talks about one who stands in the gap. This idea is something I think is important. I think a lot of people downplay its significance because they've been misled in other religions, and so then they kind of put it out of their mind. But what God is telling through Ezekiel is that if you had Noah here, he would only save himself by his righteousness. Because we read, Noah, Ish Sadiq, Noah is a righteous man in his generation. But he saved more than himself, right? What about Job? You know, you look at these different examples. What about Daniel? Now, people debate, is this the Job? Is this the Daniel? You can read all about that. I'm sure there's something on the web, other studies. It's beyond the scope of this class. There are times throughout history where members of the intimate council have been called to function in an intermediary role for the purpose to lead and direct and to guide God's people along a straight and narrow path. That is the function of the prophets, my servants, the prophets. They're called into the sowed, they get a message. They are to give that message to the people for the purpose of turning them from their bad and to their good. Amos says that unless he does nothing, Jehovah does nothing unless he reveals his sowed to his servants, the prophets. And Jeremiah says that that involves seeing and hearing the word of Jehovah. And that further, you know that they are in the know of the sowed when they proclaim a message intended to cause people to turn from the bad and turn toward the good. The unfaithful are excluded from this company. Those who are in the sowed are shown the covenant, and often the faithful ones, as the prophets are referred to, my servants, the prophets. This is the group that's in the sowed. So I want to give you a taste of what one hears in the sowed. What would it be like if you were privy to the secret council? Well, for that, all we need to do is but look in the book of books. Because we have examples of what is heard and seen in the sowed. Go to 1 Kings 17. 1 Kings 17. 1 Kings 17, and I want to go to verse 13. Let's see. And make sure this is what I'm looking for. No, it must be 2 Kings. It's what happens when you just jot it down. Might have left off something. Let me look here real quick. Yeah, it's 2 Kings 17:13. And then Jehovah testified against Israel and against Judah by all the prophets, by all the seers, saying, turn from your evil ways and keep my commandments and my statutes according to all the Torah which I commanded your fathers and which I sent to you by my servants, the prophets. Yet they would not hear. Yet they would not hear, but hardened their necks like the neck of their fathers that did not believe in Jehovah their God. They rejected his statutes and his covenant that he made with their fathers and his testimonies which he testified against them. And they followed worthless paths and became themselves worthless and went after the nations that were round about them concerning whom Jehovah had charged them that they should not do like them. And they left all the commandment of Jehovah their God and made them molten images, two calves, made an Asherah and worshipped all the host of heaven and served the Baal. And they caused their sons and their daughters to pass through the fire and use divination and enchantments and gave themselves up to do evil in the sight of Jehovah to provoke him to anger. Therefore, Jehovah was angry with Israel and removed them out of his sight. There was none left but the tribe of Judah only. And it goes on. The idea is that here we see that the servants, the prophets, come forward with a message that says, turn from your bad ways. Notice again verse 13. Jehovah testified against Israel and Judah and by all the prophets and by all the seers, these are the people of the Sod, by saying, turn from your evil ways and keep my commandments. So here's what the prophets, all the prophets, all the seers are hearing in the Sod. Go tell my people. It's a simple message. Turn from your bad ways. Turn to the good. Do these things. Don't do these things. Guard my commands, my statutes, all my Torah I commanded your fathers, which I sent to them. It says, B'yad Avdi, by the hand of my servants. So he sends his servants out. Look at Jeremiah. Let's go through a couple of these. Jeremiah chapter 7. Jeremiah 7, and let's start in verse 3. Here's what you hear in the Sod. Thus says Jehovah Tzaveot, the God of Israel, amend your ways and your doings, and I will cause you to dwell in this place. Trust not in lying words, saying, the temple of Jehovah, the temple of Jehovah, the temple of Jehovah are these. Lots of people think this is me. Lots of people think that if we just had the temple, that everything would be fine. You realize that Jeremiah lives in a time where the temple has been restored. Everything's operating as it, quote unquote, should be. And they begin to rely on the external elements of religion. They're thinking, nothing can happen to us. We had the righteous King Josiah. They just found not long ago the Torah of Moses. They had a great little short-lived revival. Restored the temple. The ark is back in the temple. But he says, trust not in lying words, the temple of Jehovah, the temple of Jehovah. Everybody's running around going, the temple, the temple, the temple. For if you thoroughly amend your ways and doings, verse 5, if you thoroughly execute justice between a man and his neighbor, if you oppress not the stranger, the fatherless, the widow, shed not innocent blood in this place, neither walk after other gods to your hurt, then will I cause you to dwell in this place, in the land that I gave to your fathers forever and ever. And then it goes on. But you trust in lying words. But notice what the message is. Change your ways. Change your walk. Change your works. Quit doing bad and do good. That's the message. Where it says, don't oppress, we get that from the Torah. He's not making this up. I'll just give you a couple of examples of don't oppress. This phrase is used in that exact form in two places. In Leviticus 19, Leviticus 19, by the way, is called the Holiness Code. Leviticus 19 says this, verse 13, Leviticus 19, 13 says, you shall not defraud your neighbor, neither rob him. The wages of him that is hired shall not abide with you all night until the morning. Defraud is the same word translated as oppress. You're pushing down on someone when you withhold what's duly theirs. You see, look at Deuteronomy 24, talking about defrauding. You shall not oppress, as it's translated. Deuteronomy 24:14. You shall not oppress. Lo ta'ashok. A hired servant that is poor and needy, whether he be of your brethren or of your strangers that are in your land within your gates. That kind of expands it. You're not allowed to defraud your people or other people. I mean, defraud, oppress is a no-no according to the Bible. And if you are in the sowed, you're going to hear things like, don't violate someone else's freedom. These are messages which have an eternal relevance. Now, look back at Jeremiah. Let's give a few more passages of things he hears. Jeremiah 18, this is the message of the sowed. You know, it's a secret, if you think of the word that way. But it's the best kept secret. And it shouldn't be. It should be shouted from the rooftops. 17, chapter 18, verse 11. Now therefore speak to the men of Judah and to the inhabitants of Jerusalem, saying, thus says Jehovah, behold, I frame evil against you and devise a device against you. Return now everyone from his evil way and amend your ways and your doings. This phrase, it shows up a little bit. It's basically, the call is, change. Change. Stop doing bad. Stop the badness of your ways and your doings and do good. But look, verse 12, and they said, there's no hope. We'll walk after our own devices and we will everyone do after the stubbornness of his evil heart. They said, look, it doesn't matter. On one hand, Jeremiah is saying destruction is coming. Amend your ways and your doings and so forth. And they're thinking, look, there's no hope in this. Look at chapter 22, Jeremiah 22, verse 3. 22:3. Execute judgment. This is thus says Jehovah. Execute judgment and righteousness and deliver the robbed out of the hand of the oppressor and do no wrong. Do no violence to the stranger, the fatherless, or the widow. Neither shed innocent blood in this place. For if you do this thing indeed, then shall there enter in by the gates of his house kings of the house of David, sitting upon his throne, riding in chariots and on horses, he and his servants and his people. But if he will not, if you will not hear these words, I swear by myself, says Jehovah, that this house shall become a desolation. Guess what? Anybody seen a descendant of David sitting upon a throne? Nope. I know there are theories that that's being occupied in another nation and another throne, but that's not true. What about a temple? Is the temple operational? The same building that they trusted in? It's been destroyed again and again. Will it fix it? If we were to build another temple, if it could work out politically and they were able to get the construction crews over there and peacefully build a temple and restart the sacrifices, does that bring the redemption? Does that fix anything? No. No. A lot of people want to see it rebuilt. They build it now. Come Messiah. Let me tell you something. You can build the most beautiful building. They've done that before. And it will be destroyed. If people don't listen to the message of the sowed, look at Jeremiah 25. Just a few more examples. 25 and beginning in verse 3. from the 13th year, this is Jeremiah speaking, from the 13th year of Josiah, the son of Amon, king of Judah, and until this day, these 23 years, the word of Jehovah has come to me, and I've spoken to you from morning till night, but you've not hearkened. And Jehovah has sent to you all his servants, the prophets, sending them from morning till night. There were a couple of other prophets even during the time of Jeremiah, you know. But you have not hearkened nor inclined your ear to hear. They said, turn back. This is the message of the sowed. Turn back now, everyone, from his evil way and from the evil of your doings, and dwell in the land that Jehovah has given to you and to your fathers forever and ever. Don't go after other gods to serve them and to worship them. Do not provoke me to anger with the works of your hands, and I will do you no hurt. Yet you've not hearkened to me, says Jehovah, that you might provoke me to anger with the work of your hands to your own hurt. Chapter 26. This is all leading up to the destruction. Verse 12. Then spoke Jeremiah 26:12 to all the princes and to all the people, saying, Jehovah sent me to prophesy against this house and against this city all the words that you've heard. You think that was popular? Preaching against the temple. In the temple, Jehovah tells him, chapter 7 and chapter 25, go stand in the court of the house, and there are going to be people walking in and out to worship, and I want you to say to them, thus says Jehovah, this place is going down in flames. I'm paraphrasing. That's what he told him. Imagine how popular he would be. Think about that in modern times. What if you had somebody at a cathedral, Notre Dame, or if you had somebody saying this at the great synagogue in Jerusalem? I mean, therefore, this is what the words they heard. Therefore, now mend your ways and your doings and obey the voice of Jehovah your God. And Jehovah will relent of the evil that he pronounced against you. This is where they're going to kill him. They want to kill Jeremiah to shut him up. And he goes back and forth. You know, he goes to God. He's in the sowed. He hears the message and he says, I come here for a drink and it's like I get here and the brook is dry. I got another bad message to give. He's just despondent. God says, I love that. I read it a couple of weeks ago, Jeremiah 15, when he says this. He basically feels like he has nowhere to go. He's hated in the city. He sits alone. And when he goes to Jehovah, Jehovah gives him more bad news to bring to the people. He has no respite from this. It's just like constant. And he gives his complaint to God, and God says, listen to me, Jeremiah. If you stand before me, I'm going to give you another chance at this. If you stand before me and listen to my words and go tell them to the people, then you'll be my mouthpiece. In other words, he doesn't address any of his complaints. He just says, listen to me, Jeremiah. I need you to listen. Focus. I'm going to say something. I need you to be my mouthpiece and go tell them. Wow. Look at chapter 35. Chapter 35 of Jeremiah, verse 15. let me back up to verse 14. The second part. Yet I have spoken to you from morning till night. You did not hearken to me. I have also sent to you all my prophets, all my servants, the prophets, sending them from morning till night, saying, return now every man from his bad way and amend your doings. Sound familiar? And go not after other gods to serve them, and then you shall dwell in the land that I've given to you and to your fathers. But you've not inclined your ear, nor have you hearkened to me. So it's the message of the sowed is very simply put, amend your ways and your doings. Don't be idolatrous. Don't do like your fathers. And what is the response to that message in the day throughout the biblical period? He says, day and night I brought my servant, got him up early. The servant business, you got to get up early, and then you go tell the message, and they don't listen, and they're not going to do it, and you go back to God and tell them they won't listen. It reminds me of life as a parent. I have 6 kids, 8 grandkids, and I can't tell you how many times I must have said this, and it never worked. Let's say child 1 is picking on child 2. Child 2 comes to me and says, child 1 just did this. And I said, listen, go back and tell them not to do that. They'll come back and say, child one's still doing it. You go tell child one that I said stop. You know they still don't stop? They still don't. Now, maybe Bridget, they were more afraid of Bridget. But I mean, I would try to tell. Look, go tell them I said this. These prophets are going to the people saying, thus says Jehovah. They're still acting like bad children. Look with me at one more prophetic passage in Zechariah chapter 7, beginning in verse 8. And the word of Jehovah came to Zechariah, saying, thus spoke Jehovah of hosts, saying, execute true judgment and show loyal love and mercy every man to his brother. Do not oppress the widow, fatherless, stranger, or the poor, and let none of you devise evil against his brother in your heart. Getting kind of deep now. But they refused to hearken, turned a stubborn shoulder, stopped their ears, and they would not hear. They made their hearts an adamant stone, lest they should hear the Torah and the words which Jehovah of hosts had sent in his spirit by the former prophets. Therefore, great anger came from Jehovah of hosts. And so when he cried and they would not hear, Jehovah of hosts said, so shall they cry and I will not hear. But I will scatter them with a storm wind among all the nations whom they know not, and the land shall be desolate after them, that no man shall pass by or return. Thus they made the pleasant land a desolation. Basically, the prophets, the servants of Jehovah, called the people to reform. Amend your ways and your doings. Turn from the bad to the good. Walk in the way of Jehovah. Live according to justice and righteousness in the land. And look, it's not just external things. It says, don't even hold bad feelings to your neighbor in your heart. A lot of people miss this. The true Torah, the true instruction of Jehovah is aimed to get on the inside. It's not just it says I'm not supposed to steal. I'd really like to get that truck that so-and-so has. You know, the Torah demands at a level of the heart. You've heard them of old say, you shall not steal. But I say to you, don't even desire what belongs to another. It doesn't mean you can't say, that's a nice truck. I'd like to have that. It's a deeper level of desire where you go to devising bad. But the same thing goes with a woman that's not a married man, can't take the woman of another man. That's the biblical command of adultery. A man is not supposed to take a woman, a wife of someone else. Further, the Torah says that you are not supposed to desire, translated covet, desire another man's woman. A lot of guys say, well, you know, boys will be boys. I mean, she is hot. I can't help it. You can help it. You can help it. The Torah says you can help it. This idea that is conveyed here demands, the prophets, the ones who are in the sowed, are being told that you can't even devise evil against a brother in your heart. Who were the men of the sowed? What are some examples? We gave some today. But what else can we learn about this from the book of books? Who was the first person allowed into this secret council? And what's the evidence of that one being invited into the inner council? Who were the men of the Sod? We have to track these and trace them by clues in the Bible. What was it that they heard and what was their message? Sometimes we know what they heard by what their message is and vice versa. We're going to have to look at this. We're going to have to study it and do a deep, in-depth survey of the people of the Sod. And that begins next week. Shabbat Shalom, Shavua Tov. Looking forward to next week. Have a blessed time. Shabbat Shalom.